This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This fall, even before the revolting attacks in Paris and San Bernardino, I ordered new actions to intensify our war against ISIL. Coalition aircraft have been increasing the pace of airstrikes, nearly 9,000 as of today. Last month, in November, we dropped more bombs on ISIL targets than any other month since this campaign started.
That was U.S. President Barack Obama's Pentagon briefing last week. This comes amid calls from the American public and politicians for tougher measures against the Islamic State following a spate of recent attacks. Popular Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump has even called for closing of mosques and special databases and IDs to monitor Muslims in America. Dr. Scott Lucas, political analyst at Birmingham University, explains why these measures could backfire.
The problem comes when you see security measures that appear to be unjustified or discriminatory. If you single out Muslims and you try to detain them simply because they look like Muslims, they look like terrorists, which has happened in the past, when in fact there's no established proof of a systematic Islamic State infiltration of refugees. In the United States, some of the rhetoric in the current presidential campaign from Republican candidates who have just stigmatized refugees and say they are a menace and a threat, you know, more than half of the governors of U.S. states saying we will not accept refugees. When you get those type of so-called security measures, that's what breeds resentment. That's what people look at and say, how dare you tell us that your values are superior and your values are what are needed to fight IS when your values are basically repressive and unjust and discriminatory? So I think it's just a question of getting a sensible approach to security, a sensible approach to link that security to social discussions, and a sensible approach to integrating some of these refugees who, quite frankly, have no other motive other than they just simply want to escape the violence and live.
In response to IS attacks, countries throughout the world have tabled tougher anti-terrorism laws, including Malaysia's own National Security Council Act. Scott expects this trend to continue next year.
What often occurs is that countries will use anti-terrorism as an excuse to crack down on or increase measures against their own communities. The Chinese used the post-2001 war on terror after 9/11 to really increase surveillance and efforts against Chinese Muslims in the west of the country. An even more prominent example is what Russia did after 2001. They used that notion of the war on terror to crack down on opposition in Chechnya to make sure that that republic didn't break away from the Soviet Union, and indeed they installed a pretty authoritarian system of control over it. The Islamic State, while it has to be confronted, I don't doubt that, I think you are going to see this cynically being used at times by governments, and not just in China, not just in Asia, but in other countries as well, to say, okay, we can use this device to deal with this threat from within. And it's something we've got to almost maintain a constant watch on because of the circumstances, not just since 9/11, but indeed since the 1970s. You know, terrorism has become this scare word which can justify political crackdowns and restrictions of rights.
Meanwhile, Russia continues to use its airstrike campaign against the IS to bolster its ally, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. This has also brought Moscow into conflict with Turkey, which shot down a Russian jet violating Turkish airspace last month.
Because those warplanes were attacking areas in northwest Syria, which included a minority called the Turkmen, who have cultural and political links to Turkey. So Turkey, I think, was waiting. And this time they said, we're ready and we're going to shoot a Russian warplane down and see how Moscow reacts. Now, the way that Moscow reacts is equally informative because their major attacks have not been against IS since then. They've stepped up bombing in northwest Syria, and they're not just hitting rebels. They're hitting border crossings. They're hitting hospitals. They're hitting water treatment plants. They're hitting other infrastructure. They're hitting bakeries. They're trying to punish those communities to basically say, if you continue to back the rebels or allow the rebels to occupy here, we will hurt you. And at the same time, they're trying to separate Turkey from the international community with a lot of propaganda, including the claim that Turkey and the Turkish government are the main supporter of the Islamic State, for example, through oil purchases. And that combination is really that the Islamic State will continue to be a pretext for the main game, which is that Russia, Iran, Hezbollah want to make sure that President Assad does not fall from power. Turkey do not want him to remain, nor does Saudi Arabia. And I think the upshot of all this is we're not going to get a political resolution in the near future. This is going to be an ongoing situation. Unfortunately for the Syrian people, it's more of the same. We're going to have more bombing, we're going to have more civilian deaths, more people being displaced.
So, instead of a one-fits-all approach, the specific underlying issues in different countries facing the IS threat must be addressed.
Where I am in Britain, I have not seen a significant social and political backlash against Muslims, despite, you know, some very nasty rhetoric in some of our tabloid press. In Europe, in France, for example, I think you saw in the aftermath of the Paris attacks an attempt by many people to come together, recognize the tragedy that had occurred, rather than stigmatizing Muslims and lashing out. Again, we'll see how the National Front tries to exploit this with their very right-wing, anti-immigrant, anti-refugee approach. In the U.S., I'm really troubled. You know, American Muslim communities, some of the strongest Muslim communities in the world, are able to be proud of being American while being proud of their faith. Yet the public rhetoric from someone like a Donald Trump or from another Republican candidate, Ben Carson, is so anti-Islamic and so hostile that you worry this is going to seep into the culture. I don't think it will cause a huge backlash yet, but I think it causes a wider problem. You know, as long as we continue to have rhetoric about Muslims and about radicalization, about extremism, as long as we continue to throw around sometimes inflammatory language and we don't actually deal with the local issues, then the Islamic State will continue to exist and it will continue to cause real problems, not just these fictional problems in the media.
Scott warns that the West could be repeating the mistakes of the past by more military action and reminds us that it was the US invasion of Iraq in 2003 which eventually led to the birth of Islamic State.
You don't get Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which is the forerunner of the Islamic State, unless you get the fight against the American occupation, unless you get the widespread resentment, especially among Sunnis, and unless you get what is going to become a civil war. You don't get Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and thus you never get the Islamic State. Go back to the way that Al-Qaeda played upon the notion of that there had to be a caliphate because of the depraved and degraded West. And instead of responding to that in a way which said, okay, look, let's deal with this in a positive way to show that Al-Qaeda basically doesn't have legitimacy, you had George Bush declaring, you know, a crusade against Al-Qaeda. That approach to Al-Qaeda was quite damaging. Well, here with the Islamic State, we face the same situation. The problems in Syria are not because Islamic communities wanted to go out and destroy the West. It's not even that Sunni and Shia communities wanted to destroy each other. At least it didn't start that way. It started because there was a government which was denying rights and reforms to its people. It was abusing people. Thousands of people were being tortured and killed in prisons. And there were people who began to protest against it. And the Assad regime decided to respond by putting down the protest. This was before an Islamic State, before Western countries were involved in Syria. But because we didn't deal with that effectively, because we didn't support Syrian people at that point, we created the condition for our nightmare.
He urges that the policies to tackle Islamic State in the coming year move towards integrating Muslims rather than alienating them further.
That we're told, you know, there is a clash of civilizations. And, you know, and this clash is going to become between West and East or between Christianity and Islam. That type of divisive, inflammatory language, which is being used by academics, sometimes by government officials. You build up the conditions where people's immediate reaction is one of fear and hostility and where groups will take advantage of that. You can't defeat the Islamic State, you know, with a top-down approach. You have to defeat it from the ground up, not only by denying it legitimacy, but by building links between communities that encourage dialogue and cooperation rather than hostility. So, for example, you've got to deal in Syria with the question of what allowed the Islamic State to move into that country. And if you don't do that, you don't deal with the problem.
That was Scott Lucas from Birmingham University. I'm Jason Lim, reporting for BFM.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.